Welcome to another edition of the Northeast Cannabis Chronicle. I'm Russ Belville. Joining us today, we have Jim Borgasani. He's been working with the campaign to regulate marijuana in Massachusetts, and we have a new development in that fight, and that comes from the compromise made by the House and the Senate in Massachusetts for new marijuana regulations. So, Jim, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for having me on.
So to get people caught up, the campaign in Massachusetts in 2016, the initiative that was passed with a certain set of provisions, among them being a 12% tax rate and the option of localities to opt out of marijuana licensing through a vote of the people. So that was what was passed, and I believe it was about a 54% margin. Tell us how that got messed up or monkeyed with in the legislature and what this compromise has now done on those issues.
Well, shortly after voters passed the initiative, the legislature started making indications that they were going to alter what the voters passed. We resisted that strongly. We pointed out that the bill was pretty much the same as most other states. It had worked in other states. It would work in Massachusetts. We didn't want to see the legislature dive in and make any changes at all. But under Massachusetts law, they have the ability to do that, and that's what they did. They held a number of hearings, public hearings. They formed a new committee. And they eventually came out with two bills. The committee did not work as a committee and come out with one bill. The House came out with its own bill, and the Senate came out with its own bill. The House bill was terrible, frankly. It would have been a disaster for legalization in Massachusetts. It would have stalled the industry for an indeterminate period of time because it was so restrictive on potential applicants. It took the approach of assuming criminality of anybody who wanted to enter, you know, the legal marijuana business. We fought vociferously against that House bill. The Senate came out with its measure, and it was much closer to what the voters passed. It made some changes, but it kept the tax rate at 12%, which is where we set it, as you mentioned, and it kept power to ban marijuana facilities or limit them in the hands of voters of a locality.
So, Jim, for our listeners from out of state, outside of Massachusetts, who may not know the politics, why would the Senate hew closer to what the people voted, but the House decide, oh, the people had no idea what they're up to, we're going to completely repeal and replace this thing? What's the political difference in those two bodies?
It's difficult for me to answer that. The House, we don't know who wrote the bill for the House. It was all done in secrecy. The House's own members were not allowed to see the bill until minutes before they had to vote on it. It was a terribly closed process. The Senate, you know, I think there's more people in the Senate who supported legalization, so they came out with a much more modest bill. But, you know, I wish I could tell you that there was a distinct reason why the House went so far out. They repealed what the voters passed and then tried to explain that they really knew what was in their hearts when they voted at the booths in November. And that was ridiculous. You know, that's just, you know, leave it to the House, frankly, to try to explain what the voters did. I think the voters explained it very well for themselves.
So it's not as if Massachusetts was going into this as the first state to legalize. At the time, there's already four states that have legalized, and the people who craft that language, I'm sure, were taking the best bits and pieces from other states to craft the question for initiative. So we get this situation. The House has something that's wildly afield and much more restrictive from what the people passed. The Senate's got something that's closely in line with what the people passed. Tell us about this compromise. This is the breaking news now, as they finally come up with this compromise. And where does that land the people of Massachusetts?
Well, it came out with a number of things. The worst sort of excesses of the House bill were neutralized in the conference committee, which is a good thing. However, there are some changes, which always happens in a compromise. And with the tax rate now, we set the tax rate at 12%. The tax rate is now at a maximum of 20%. That's a 17% state tax and a 3% local option tax. It's higher than we wanted it to be. But, you know, I guess the only positive thing is it's still on the low side if you look at various states. Maine is 10%, but I think Nevada is at 17%. Oregon might be about that.
That's something I wanted to bring up, Jim, is that I'm calling you from Portland, Oregon, and you mentioned 17% local, 3%, or 17% state, 3% local is exactly what Oregon's tax is. Well, did Oregon come up in the debates in the framing of this measure? Did they just happen to coincidentally come up with those numbers that exactly match our state?
I don't remember during the public hearings hearing any state revenue come up other than other state tax rate come up other than always comparing Massachusetts to being lower than other states. I'm sure the committee members knew all the various rates set by the states. So you could look at it as they were just, you know, copying Oregon's rate, or you could look at it, that's the exact middle. The House asked for a 28% total tax. The Senate wanted 12. They compromised. The House came down 8. The Senate went up 8. They ended at 20. So, you know, our hope is that we knew that 12% was going to be sufficient to fund the administration of the initiative. The Department of Revenue came up with numbers that said by the second year, we'd be seeing $130 million in new revenue. The question becomes, is that rate low enough to suppress the illicit market?
Well, that will yet to be seen, especially when you're going to have competition not too far a drive away in the state of Maine, where the tax rates and the regulations may be lower. We'll have to also see how that may affect the situation. The other part of the compromise that is of note to our listeners is the Senate, again, hewing to the will of the people and making it so if a town wants to ban marijuana licensees, namely pot shops, they have to have a vote of the people, whereas the House wanted to give the full reign over to the city councils, where you only need like a 3-2 vote or a 4-3 vote to be able to ban these things. Describe the compromise on that issue.
Well, it's a hybrid. They went to look at the ballot rolls, and they decided to look at the ballot vote in each town. Now, a town, there are 351 cities and towns in Massachusetts. They decided that the towns that voted for question four, in other words, for legalization, they would stay with the ballot language. In other words, the voters in that town would retain the power to ban or limit marijuana facilities in that town. If towns voted against question four, which 91 of them did, in those towns, the local governing authority has that power. And as you pointed out, some of these, a lot of towns in Massachusetts had a 3-person board of selectmen. So by a 2-to-1 vote in those towns, the selectmen could say, we don't want marijuana in our town. We wanted to keep it all with the voters, as did the Senate. But, you know, they had to reach a compromise, and they did, and that's what they came up with. Some people are questioning the constitutionality of that hybrid system. That remains to be seen, if it will be challenged, and if it does, you know, what the challenges will ultimately result, what ruling there will result in.
Now, what are the mechanisms as far as the tax revenues, especially that 3% local, I assume, is going only to the locality that approves cannabis sales within their jurisdictions. But that 17% state, does any of that accrue to these 91 townships that have did not vote for? And if they do ban, would any of that money go to them?
Well, it all depends. The money, it's 6.25% excise tax. And about, you know, 9.25% it's 6.25% sales tax, and the rest is an excise tax. It all goes back to the general fund. The only earmark of that money is for opioid treatment beds. None of that money will go to the towns, any town, whether they voted for it or against it. You know, indirectly, it could, if it goes into the general fund, it comes out as part of a local aid package. But I haven't seen any indication that it's going to go to any of the towns in the form of straight financial aid of any kind.
Okay. Well, Jim, this this issue as well on local control is another area where it seems like Massachusetts is copying from Oregon. In our ballot initiative 91, Measure 91, we had a similar mechanism. If you wanted to ban pot shops, you had to have a local vote. And the compromise came down. If your county voted 55% or more against the measure, you didn't have to follow that local vote. I'm interested that you brought up the constitutionality of that, how that might apply in Massachusetts. Is this a case of where we can't have localities deciding that if they didn't like a statewide vote, they don't have to follow it? Is that just bad precedent, legally speaking, in Massachusetts?
It could, yes, you framed it perfectly. If a particular town doesn't vote for the governor, they still have to follow the executive yeah. orders of the governor.
Yes.
You can't opt out. You take this to its logical conclusion. A town can't, you know, in Massachusetts, we've never seen a town being able to opt out of some of the strictures of a statewide law that was passed. So this is new ground. And I think, you know, in the media today, there's already, you know, some third-party attorneys, constitutional attorneys, who are saying, this is going to be studied, and this may be challenged, and we'll see what happens.
I hope that challenge is successful. I've also argued, you know, from the point of view of the voter, when I'm in whatever town or county voting on whether or not marijuana should be legal and pot shops should be, that's a different question than if now marijuana is legal and everyone can cultivate it, should we keep pot shops illegal? It's a different vote. It's a different question at that point. And someone who might have been against legalization after legalization happens might realize, well, look, you know, horse is out of the barn now. Let's at least have legal pot shops. Those people don't get that choice in those 91 cities.
No, they don't. They don't get a choice at all. It's going to be up to their selectmen. I should point out that after December 2019, it all goes back to voters. So okay. This hybrid system is in place only for about a year and a half or so, about a year and a half. I think the thinking is they're going to give towns the ability early on to make a decision. But after that, if they wait, it's going to go directly to the voters. So we're looking at, you know, a sunsetted hybrid system that still doesn't mean that it may not be challenged.
Mm-hmm. So under that sunset, if a place like Foxborough decides they're not going to have it, their selectmen vote against it, that stays in effect, though, after December 2019. It just means any other future towns that haven't banned it would have to take it to the voters after that point.
That's correct. The Fox, say a town like Foxborough did vote to ban it. If the selectmen voted to ban it, it would be a bylaw, and that would stay in place. However, a bylaw can be overturned. So none of this is permanent. If the voters in the town or if the selectmen in Foxborough decide we're going to overturn that bylaw, there's a process for doing so. And I think, you know, we're seeing across the country and across the world, you know, gradually a normalization of the use of marijuana and the presence of marijuana. People are starting to realize, look, we've been fighting this forever. It's time we realize that it's a commerce system that's being dominated by, you know, criminals. Let's make it a regulated system that pays money and taxes, that creates jobs, where the sellers check IDs. Massachusetts, even though we're a blue state, it's going to be a little while before we get over all of the hysteria that's been drilled into our heads for the past 50 years. I am confident that's going to happen. And I think at some point, I don't know if it'll be 5 years, 7 years, or 15 years, people are going to look back and say, what were we so afraid of?
Indeed. So what are our final steps legislatively here? This conference committee has come up with this hybrid bill. Does it still have to be ratified both chambers and signed? Where are we at that way?
Yes, it has to go to both chambers. They have to pass it. We suspect that will happen very quickly. They can't make any amendments. It's an up or down vote in both bodies. Then it goes to the governor. Now, the governor does have veto power, line item veto power. He can veto portions of this bill if he chooses. And then it goes back to the legislature, and they can either accept his vetoes or they can override his vetoes. He hasn't seen the bill yet. Or, you know, I'm sure his legal people are looking at it now. He hasn't indicated if he's going to sign or not. But he did indicate that he's happy that a bill is heading his way. So we'll have to see what happens there. Then the next fight is to get adequate funding for the Cannabis Control Commission so that we can get the regulatory body up and running.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on Massachusetts and how the development of the legal cannabis industry and regulations take shape. Jim Borgasani is a communications director. He was working with the Yes on 4 campaign, joining us here from Massachusetts. We thank you so much for your expertise and good luck on all this progress in Massachusetts.
Thank you very much, Russ.